Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Phil and Mickey. Welcome, Phil and Mickey.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
How are you two today?
Great.
I'm fine.
Great, great. Phil, why don't we start with you and tell us about the Africa blogs.
Well, I am a fan of the Africa blog, as I'm sure so many others who are out there listening to us are. And I find it just so, well, it's a lot of things for me. It's exciting and it's wonderful and it's a real connection to Africa. And it's such a, for me, it's such a Sangha experience because it's like, you know, we're all there, we're all doing it, and the blog actually brings me there. So I feel like even though I know in one way we are all there and we are all doing it, it's so fun to actually see what we're doing and meet who we're doing it for and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like it's a more intimate representation of what we know is already going on.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and as you said, I too love it, and I click many times a day to see if there's an update.
Right.
And I really feel like I'm going through the day with Jen and Sherry and whoever else is there and going out to Cantalumba and going through the daily tasks and getting the update on what's going on.
Exactly, yeah. It really is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And what I've noticed recently is, in the recent blogs, is a lot of the focus on communication, which has been really fun for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mickey,
yeah.
Tell us what you've been seeing in the blogs.
Well, you know, I've always loved the blog, and I'm like you in that I tune in several times a day to see if there's another entry posted.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's really so immediate. I mean, even though the entries might lag by a few days by what they're actually doing, you know, in reality, to actually see the things that are going on not many days after they went on is really pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And you know, it's for me, it's probably unlikely that I'll ever get to go there in person. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's unlikely. So it's really my best chance to get a glimpse of the place and the people and, you know, put faces to names. And another thing that I really appreciate about it is that I often, at least once a year, will solicit my friends and colleagues to send donations to help support the project. And I always, when I write the letter to them, I always tell them the link to the blog, and I say, you can see for yourself what your money would go to support.
Yes, it's great. It's great. And as you were talking, the sense that came up for me from the blogs is that it's just so transparent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting
kind
of a glossed over picture of, you know, just the parts that are working. I'm really getting what feels like an unbiased view as if I'm right there going around with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Often in the blogs, you know, they've talked about things that have come up that were, you know, that were kind of challenging. But they're right there in the blog.
Yeah.
And Michael and Mickey, you know, the other thing that that I love about it is that, I've learned a lot from the blog in the interactions between with Sherry or Jen or Dave or whoever's there, and the people there have taught me a lot just from reading the blogs. Some of the stuff that, I mean, I'm just so inspired by, you know, their just taking the ball, so to speak, and running with it. So their ingenuity, they're just inspired by them, and I really love that piece of it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Phil, the sense I got as you were talking is a real sense of perseverance.
Yes.
And I know from a feels like a more conditioned perspective. There's sort of a story of, you know, I can't imagine how people could live with like that, and I could never survive that, and getting by on so little. And yet, as you say, Phil, over time, it feels like I get to know those people more and more, and I see what's possible in their lives, and I begin to see, of course, what's possible in my life as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And just the joy that radiates, you know, from them. And we know the hardships, you know, that they experience. And it's an inspiration for me in my life, as you say, and also just their ingenuity, you know, what they can just do with. It reminds me a lot of the monastery, actually. But anyhow, that is something I feel like it's a real, you know, win-win, give, you know, give and receive and give, just kind of that a spiral of momentum among the two, the sanghas. We're not even two sanghas, but among the Africa Living Compassion and our Living Compassion over here.
Yeah, that word inspiring was one that came up for me too. And, you know, one of the things that I think really happens for me when I read the blogs and am inspired by what they're doing and how committed they are and how happy they are in the conditions in which they live. And it's really kind of a good antidote to conditioning, you know, because it's harder to get lost in my own stories when I'm reading theirs. it can make mine seem pretty silly.
Yes. Bill, do you want to say a little bit about a fun game that is being planned and that's going to be rolled out?
Well, I can start that. It's a mystery game, right? And it's still a bit of a mystery. And the end result is going to be this lovely, mysterious T-shirt, and there's this magic word. And we are finding different clues in the different ads that are coming our way. And then there's a link to a puzzle, you know, like something that looks like a crossword puzzle for us to, you know, keep track of our words. And then in the end, there'll be some kind of, a sentence or so that's the clue to the mystery word. That's what my understanding of it. I'm not sure that's exactly it, but I think that's...
Great. Mickey, do you want to add anything to that?
That's how I understood it from the one email that's come out with our first clue, and I think I've already got my first word in the puzzle, actually.
Oh, good. Great.
I like puzzles, so it's a great new feature for me. But you know, as I was thinking, you know, and Phil was talking about it in the T-shirts and the bridge walk, you know, the other thing about particularly the blog that happens during this trip that is in the late summer is always to me is like a great advertisement and motivator for the bridge walk too, because sort of vicariously being part of that particular trip and how it gets kind of close to the bridge walk, it's almost like, you know, how could anyone not go to the bridge walk if they've been reading that?
Yeah.
It really highlights all the wonderful things that are going on over there.
And we have to mention that the words we're looking for are bimbo words, aren't they? I mean, the translation of a bimbo word. So we're learning a little bimbo as we go. And that part's fun.
Yes, so Bemba is the language that they speak in Kandalomba and in that region in Zambia.
Mm.
So as Phil said, there's a weekly bridge walk reminder email that comes out, and in there is going to be a link to the blogs, as I understand it, and in the blogs there'll be a Bemba word and English translation, and it's fun for me because it ties together the work in Africa, the email campaign about the bridge walk, bridging different cultures, and of course the mystery message of what the message on the T-shirt is going to be.
Yeah.
And now we just have to learn how to pronounce the words.
Maybe they could send a recording along with it. That would be kind of cool, huh?
Yeah.
or it would be another incentive to go to the bridge walk, because we could probably find out then.
Yes, a perfect incentive, the bridge walk. We could speak in Bimba by then, maybe.
So the bridge walk is Saturday, October 2nd. It's the 9th annual. It'll be in San Francisco. And if you will not be in San Francisco, you can certainly order a T-shirt and share in that part of the fun mystery.
Mm.
Mickey, Phil, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you,
You're welcome,
Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's been
good
lovely.
Night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Melinda. Melinda, are you?
Yes, I was just saying it's a pleasure to be here. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can now. Great.
Very good. I am indeed unmuted.
Great. How are you?
Good. It was really fun listening to our blog enthusiasts and the talking about the new mystery Bimba word game that we all get to play.
Yes.
I love it. It's a language that is so very different from ours, or from pretty much any language that I've ever come in contact with. So that makes it extra exciting.
Great. Tell us more about your experience with that.
I just lost you there, Michael. You said, tell us more about
your experience of the Bimba language.
Oh, well, one word I know is thank you, which is Tuatotela.
Tuatotela.
Yeah. So the language also has a kind of a musical rhythm that, of course, our language usually lacks, which just makes it even more fun.
Great. That sounds fun.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the sort of treasure hunt in the Bimba language.
Yes. Wonderful. Melinda, I have a few announcements here.
All righty.
So there are a few upcoming workshops with Sherry for those who'd like to attend a short event. And the first one is September 11th in Mountain View at the newly renovated Mountain View Zen Center. And the title for that is Practice Being What We Want for the World.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, all of us are really looking forward to that.
Yes. You know, what I like about that title is sort of the non-dualistic nature of looking at what I want for the world, which includes me and includes everything.
Yep. Our heart's desires tend to be very similar, if not identical.
Yes. And then on October 16th in the evening, Sherry will be at the Integral Yoga Institute in New York. Title is, The Mind is Like Tofu, Flavor It Peacefully.
I love it.
And then on November 6th, Sherry will be in San Diego. What you practice is what you have.
And that's sort of our theme for the year, isn't it?
Yes, and seems like a true statement to me.
Yeah. Am I practicing peace and joy and contentment and well-being? Or am I practicing being in conversation with the voices that would keep me in suffering?
Yes, and I tend to have the experience of which choice I make.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful. Melinda, we have some callers here.
Well, let's talk.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jodine calling from California.
Hello, Jodine.
Hi. I'm so glad to be on the air. I don't often have the opportunity, because of my schedule, to call in, but I decided to join the club of people who use a use their calendar and say, okay, I'm going to put it on my calendar. So that's what I did.
Yeah, it's a way of making a practice commitment to yourself. And then the fact that you announce it tonight lets everybody else know that you have this practice commitment to call in on a regular basis.
Yeah, yeah. And, I so appreciate that the show is available, even though I participate in a lot of other things with the Sangha in person, because I'm lucky enough to live in California.
Right near the Mountain View Zen Center.
Yes, yes. But one of the things that I've noticed from listening to the archives is that I like when people call in and report back. Like, I like to hear how people are doing.
Yes, Jodine, I was thinking that just as you were describing putting it on your calendar, that it's so neat for all of us to be able to follow along another person's progress, another person's steps in practice, because we can all just really relate.
Yes, yeah. it's that, we are one. We really are one.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I take away from it, and so, my report.
Okay.
So what I've been kind of looking at, or what's been going on for me, is I had a, in the spring, I would say I had a big opening. I had a really big insight, really a life-changing insight.
Mm.
And it's been kind of working out, all these different aspects of it have been kind of revealing themselves kind of in this organic process.
Hmm. Could you say a little bit more about that, how the aspects are reviewing themselves?
Well, so the first time I called in the spring, I wanted to share this big insight, which was basically that in my practice, conditioning had gone underground and adopted the language of practice. And so where I saw myself was one time I heard Sherry guiding somebody else saying, you might be doing practice in order to live a better egocentric life.
Yes, yes.
And there was a sense, there was a big part of my life where I think I was doing that.
Doing practice, so conditioning slides in somewhere and kind of gets very quietly in the driver's seat and is doing practice in order to sort of meet whatever karmic standards have been set up for you.
Yes. And all the while, me thinking I had transcended all of that.
Yes. Yes.
And so I'm
on the right
Sherry,
path now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. My life is so different now. And I was telling Sherry that I woke up one day this spring and realized that I'm working two paid jobs and two volunteer jobs, or I was, in order to qualify for this new career, which is going to make my life into, the perfect life.
Yeah, it's the career that I should have done in the first place, and all of those things, all of those things, the conditioning, and there were probably lots of shoulds and if only, or then when?
Well, the thing is, there wasn't, if there was a lot of real obvious talk like that, I think I would have caught it.
Right, right.
But there wasn't a lot. It was just this day of waking up and feeling like, I'm on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Like, you know, what happened?
Yeah.
But so that was kind of my big insight, that this voice that I'd been listening to in my life before practice, you know, I was still following along that voice.
Yeah.
And the next kind of piece of it was that I decided, you know, I'm going to do less.
I'm going to do less.
I'm going to do less. Yeah, I'm going to just drop some of this stuff, because what in the world do I need to be doing all this stuff for?
Yeah. So you've just sort of been quietly talked into doing way more than was really good for you, it sounds like.
You know, it's there is definitely in a very real sense, I was not taking care of myself.
Yes, yeah. And so you woke up to this insight, and it sounds like one of the next steps was to cut some of the things out that you were doing.
Yes. And that was interesting, I have to say. I quit one of my volunteer jobs.
Yeah.
But this is a little bit getting off of the track of the organic kind of growing of it.
Okay.
So kind of what then happened was I was just listening, kind of listening to the internal conversations and saying, you know, what do I want, and where kind of am I going, or where do I want to aim myself? And realizing that the impulse, there is a desire of my heart to pursue or to have a compassionate livelihood.
Mm-hmm. To pursue or have a compassionate livelihood.
Yes, and that is something that has that is a very authentic desire from my heart, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, I've been really exploring that from day one on this planet, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
Because livelihood to me is much bigger than, in a sense, like what I'm doing to make ends meet.
Right. What brings the paycheck in isn't the whole story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even like going back to when I was a kid and like, you know, well, what do you want to do with your life? you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, what are you going to major in college?
Right.
So that really dropped in after that initial insight of like, you know, this is not how I want to be doing this right now. But in my heart, there's a impulse to that I'm kind of maybe outgrown kind of what I'm doing, and that there's something new that feels like wants to be born.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were able to begin to see this as you saw that somehow conditioning had come in and redirected things in a way that was definitely not compassionate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I just got to this really interesting place of like, you know, is there any big hurry here? You know, like, what's the big hurry?
Another insight.
Yeah, like one of the things that was going on was the thinking about going back to school and getting another degree, and and these deadlines about that, and when would I go back to school, and when am I going to have enough money to do that, and, you know, like, and all these kind of contingent plans and things that I need to do now to be positioned 2 years from now where I want to be, kind of like conditioning loves to get me onto that kind of thing. Because
yeah, a little bit of urgency. Never. It actually is always a flag that conditioning is there, isn't it?
Well, now I'm like, you know, and that's kind of that's a really useful question to ask. Like, what's the big hurry here?
What's the big hurry? Yep.
So then something really interesting happened, which is, I went on a retreat around the time when I had kind of cleared my life out a bit, you know, like a little more time for myself. And when I came back from the retreat, I basically watched as my practice fell away.
Isn't that like, amazing how that can happen right after a retreat?
You know, I haven't. This is the first time I've experienced this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, and it's not like it totally fell away, but, you know, I started having days when I didn't meditate. And maybe like once or twice a week, you know, that's like, that hasn't happened for me for years and years.
So how did you catch on to it, Jodine?
Well, interesting that you might ask. I had a flare up also of an old back injury. That kind of is one of these things where if I'm not taking care of myself, my body lets me know that.
Yes, yes.
So suddenly I was like, oh, no, you know, oh, that ache, that, you know, back. And then I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I haven't been exercising. I haven't been meditating all the time, you know, every day.
Taking care of myself.
I'm not taking care of myself. Like, yeah, so, and then I was like, is this all related?
Started,
and I really think it is.
Yeah, things started dropping in a big way, it sounds like. And you had another waking up to what was going on.
Yeah, so, I think that it was like, conditioning chips were really down, you know, like with all that practice and all those ideas and insights.
Yes. And you're actually moving toward really taking care of yourself in important ways. So it started convincing you to stop taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And where are you now with it?
Yeah. I have basically, one of the interesting things is there's a transition coming up in my life, so I'm going to be moving to a new place to live. And another part of this is I think that conditioning, knowing that was coming up.
The move.
That could also be part of this where like, aha, you know, let's get her, you know, when she's going to be kind of stressed.
Yeah,
you know?
As Sherry has said in a number of times, we do tend to fall asleep during transitions.
Yes, I recognize that in myself, absolutely. So where I've been with this is, I immediately did the things I know I needed to do to take care of my body, which for me is chiropractic care and massage and taking it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Um, and um, And I have been watching my meditation practice with an eye to that I have a commitment to meditate every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't have to look like it's always looked for me.
Mm.
So I used to meditate for half an hour every morning.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, clockwork, you know, like toothbrushing. That started, you know, when that started falling away, one of the things that I noticed was that there were some, there was probably some reasons for that. Like, my sleep pattern was had kind of changed for reasons having to do with where I live. And so I said, well, you know, I can divide up my meditation to a morning and evening and make it shorter.
Mm.
And I used to have that as an alternative to the 30 minutes. I would do 15 in the morning and 15 at night.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of wasn't working for me either.
Mm.
And conditioning was kind of, you know, getting me to say, just forget it, you know. And so now I've been on I've been doing 20 minutes in mornings when I don't work out, and then 10 minutes in the evening, still 30 minutes. And sometimes in the evening I find I want to sit longer, so I'll do 20 minutes, you know, then.
Yeah, well, you know, Judine, you might want to just really keep a close eye on that. One of the things we always, when we're sort of introducing people to meditation, one of the important guidances is to set it up ahead of time, what you are actually going to do, and then do exactly what you've set up, so you don't get into that situation of, well, this is a good sit. I think I'll sit for another 10 minutes, which is such a, you know, it opens the door for the little voices to come in and mess with your commitments. You know what I mean?
Interesting point. Yeah, actually, because there's like, well, that's the good person thing to do is to sit longer, right?
Pardon me?
That's conditioning. I'm saying that, like, the good person thing to do is to sit longer.
Right.
Like,
and
that's
so,
what conditioning would say. Yeah.
Right. It would be saying that just as you're, you know, watch out when you set your commitment too, that conditioning doesn't come in there and say, well, you know, whatever conditioning will say, which is usually trying to point us in the direction of less rather than something that's truly compassionate for us.
Did you say conditioning is trying to point us in the direction of less?
Maybe possibly doing less. It certainly wants us to do less practice. And it sounds like that's what you've been discovering over the past several months, where you watched your practice fall away, as you said. And that's what conditioning would love to have happen. So to be really mindful and set up a schedule for yourself, you know, we have a schedule at the monastery to really help us avoid getting into debates with the voices about what we're going to do today or tomorrow, and instead have a schedule that's set ahead of time, and then make a commitment, as you have with the putting these calls on the calendar. Make a commitment for whatever period of time, maybe 2 weeks, and see how that goes. And then if it feels like you're really on and you want to do more, crank it up. Make a commitment for another couple of weeks. But to watch out for the day-to-day moving things around, because that's where conditioning really has a field day, often, with many of us.
Yeah, that debate. That's what I found myself just astounded to. I was finding myself in that debate almost every morning.
Yes.
And it had just been so not at all part of my daily experience for such a long time.
Yeah, the toothbrushing analogy is a great one, because that's actually what Sherry encourages, is sit until you get to a place where it's just like you always sit. Whoops, got a little thing going off here beside me.
Is that a tweet?
It probably is, actually. But so every day at this time I sit, just like every day at this time I brush my teeth. So that it does take it out of the hands of the debaters who would really drain our energy by putting us through that debate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, great. I'm so glad I called, because what I knew that I needed to kind of rein this in.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought of that, of like set out the schedule and do it. And I know how helpful that is. So I'm moving on Sunday. Yeah. So I'm, you know, the move is about to overtake me, and so I'm gonna try that. I'm gonna try a schedule and just see how it goes.
And you're going to report back.
Yes, and I will call back. And I should also decide what the frequency of that is going to be.
Actually, a really good idea. Put it, you know, make your practice plan.
Right.
Yeah.
So how about I'll call back in 3 weeks, okay?
There you go.
Put
it on your
calendar. How it's going. Okay, and there it is. Yep, September 7th.
All right. We'll
okay.
Talk to you then.
Okay, thanks, Melinda.
Thank you, Jodeen. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodeen. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the pleasure of being joined by Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and a helpful message, and we'll be right back.
All right. I'll be here.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Deanna.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi, Melinda. I'm struggling a lot with obsessive thinking, and I think I need some support.
With obsessive thinking?
Yeah. This is my second call in a decade, so I'm on it.
that's 100% improvement, isn't it?
Exactly. I've had three big pieces of content over the last 6 months: difficulty with my father, poor health of my brother, and the end of a long-term relationship.
Big ones.
End of a relationship that I did not want to end. And what's happening is when I'm not working or concentrating on something else, the the default position is to obsess about the end of the relationship. And I feel like I'm throwing everything I have at it, you know, meditation, you know, groups, coming back to the breath, listening to the CDs, reassuring, you know, I can go on and on. And it feels like I'm expending a huge amount of effort. There's a feeling of just working at this.
Deanna, you're blipping in and out. Now, I don't know if it's my phone or your phone or the connection on the...
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Is she blipping out for you, Michael?
I can hear her fine.
Oh, okay. So maybe my phone. Let me try taking it off speaker and see if that helps. Go ahead, Deanna.
So I guess there's a feeling of throwing everything I have, all the tools,
mm-hmm.
at it, and a real feeling of working at it.
Yes.
And quite a bit of exhaustion.
Yeah.
You know, because the thoughts, you know, the days, well, the thoughts come back so often, you know, that it's like, okay, there's a thought. Okay, come back to the breath. And then I get a few seconds. Then I come back to the thought, and then I try something else, you
uh-huh.
know. So I think there's three places I want some support. The fall back to obsessive thinking, the non-acceptance of the content, and the lack of feeling. I hear Sherry and the monks talk about the universe supporting you, and when there's three big pieces of content, you know, self-hate or conditioning is not believing that the universe is supporting me when it gets bad. I mean, I'm a little out of it at this moment because I'm talking to you, you know.
Yeah, so you've disidentified a little bit from the person who's feeling like, hey, not only is the universe not supporting me, it's giving me more than I want to deal with.
Right.
I
don't seem to be able to call into the radio show when I'm identified. I think I could call today because I popped out.
Uh-huh. And how did you pop out, do you know? How'd you do that?
I don't have a great answer. I think I got very excited about some brain research that I'm
uh-huh.
into, and I think that excitement brought me back to a certain vivaciousness for life,
uh-huh.
which connected me to kind of a curiosity that allowed my vision to get wider.
Wow, yeah. And the brain research is something you're doing on the side?
Yeah.
Because there is very current research out there about things like obsessive thinking. And I don't know if that's specifically what you're talking about, but...
Well, I guess it connected, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to see, it really feels like my brain gets into a rut, and that's where it feels like it is now, and it's, you
yeah.
know, redoing a big groove. And so, yeah, very interested in the plasticity of the brain and, you know, whether whether the practice helps create new grooves.
Yes, yes. Yes, that, as Sherry would put it, redirecting the attention.
Yeah.
Focusing
yeah.
on something, just really kind of, I'm just trying to find a way to describe the enormous mental effort it can take to move the attention away from the place that it habitually wants to go to something that is completely different. And as you say, has the possibility of beginning to dig new ruts that feel a whole lot better when we manage to get into them.
Right. And self-hate, you know, is hating me through saying, oh, look at you, you're not successful in getting out of the rut. You're trying everything you got and it's not working.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's being pretty crafty, you know, at whatever I'm trying.
Trying it, doing its usual, very skillful pulling the rug out from under you.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And what would it be like to go ahead and join the thoughts? You know what I mean?
terrifying. I think my reaction is I will go deep into depression. But this is what the voices say. I'll go deep into depression and I won't come out.
Uh-huh. So if you stopped resisting the repetitive thoughts, what conditioning tells you is that would wind you up in a very, very deep depression.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I've had other big content, when my mom died and
yeah.
my thinking went to the obsessive,
yeah.
What worked really well was saying to her, I miss you and I love you. And that brought me back to my heart. And
yeah, it acknowledged her death and also acknowledged your feelings for her. And it sounds like interrupted the constantly going back in a way that didn't feel compassionate to you.
Right, right. I'm less successful at figuring out what that sentence is for a breakup that I did not want.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
best I can come up with is, of course you are hurting, sweetie. Of course you're in shock. Of course you're in grief.
Yeah, and you don't like what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how is that for you, Deanna, when you're able to remember to say those things to yourself?
I feel some space.
Yeah.
I feel some space.
Yep. Yep. And how long ago was the breakup?
The final was 2 months ago.
So not that long ago.
No. I mean, I had some, 8 months ago, he was super loving, everything was great, and he walked out with no explanation. And then he came back and said, no, I want to get back together, but he didn't really come back. And so
right.
I've been dealing with it for about eight months.
Yeah, yeah. And
so conditioning says, well, it's been 8 months since the beginning. You should be
yes.
out of it,
I would be in favor of saying it's been 2 months and giving yourself a little bit of a break there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really sounds, Deanna, like you're on, you're on a practice track that over time will serve you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're finding the reassurance that really speaks to the one or more parts of you who are really grieving and who didn't want it to end and who have whatever feelings they have about it.
Yeah,
but it kind of makes sense that it would be coming back around again and still needing some healing time.
Right, right. And yeah, and I think in the last couple of weeks I got to the place of using the grief word, and that helped enormously, to finally just say, okay, I'm in grief.
Yeah.
And that seemed to, it's helping me to pop out. But I definitely fall back often into believing the conditioning story of I've been abandoned by my father, I'm abandoned by this boyfriend, I'm abandoned by my friends, and it feels pretty darn compelling when looking at the experiential
Right. Oh, definitely. And it sounds like I don't know if you have reassurances that speak very directly to those feelings of abandonment.
I do have kind of my list of lies. It's a lie that you're not loved by your father. It's a lie that you're not loved by your friends.
And what if you come around to the side of what is so, of what the truth is, what would the truth be as you speak it to the part of you who is really feeling abandoned?
I don't know. The closest I've gotten is you are loved by your father, but that doesn't deal with the feeling of abandonment.
Right, because that person's still abandoned. I mean, he's still gone.
Right.
But what I'm wondering about is the mentor in Deanna who isn't going to leave no matter what.
Yes, that seems to work better. I will never leave you. I'm right here.
Yes. That was the one I was wondering about.
It helps me with not abandoning myself, not as helpful with coming to peace with friends and family. But maybe, you know, that happens later.
Yeah, and that as those parts of us who have always felt abandoned, for so many of us, as they really get it, that we mean it, that we're, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I may lose, my attention may get pulled away, but I'm going to keep coming back and I will be with you. But those parts, they need a little history with us to know that we really mean it. So no matter what anybody else in the universe does, I'm here and I'm not leaving.
And this idea of the universe is all, you're always enough for whatever happens, and the universe is supporting me.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of feels a little clunky.
Yeah. And some of those take a little time in terms of perspective shifts. You know, have you had experience, I'm sure you have, experiences where something happened that seemed like a total disaster, and then within maybe 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, you realize it was really something that in the long run was to your benefit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And,
That's what I'm pointing at.
Yeah, and when I'm at center, I mean, in the moments I'm at center, I do feel, I don't know about supported by the universe, but that I'm okay, or everything is okay.
Yes.
It's just a little.
Well, and it's fabulous to have that, because those are the things, those places that you know in yourself, the feeling you have when you are at center, you can keep going back to that, you know? So, okay, my thoughts are taking off again in a way I don't want them to go. I remember what center feels like. I'm going to go there at least for a nanosecond.
Nanosecond is the right way to describe
that. And that's what it feels like. And those nanoseconds begin to expand. But we got to be patient.
Yeah.
Because none of it, as you well know, none of it is is very often a speedy process.
No.
So kindness overall, no matter what.
Right, and definitely seeing that conditioning is going to use everything. You know, it's going to find the most painful content to throw at me, you know, whatever the context. And, you know,
yes.
It's doing a great job.
Yeah, it's doing a great job, and you're doing a great job in terms of looking for support, doing everything you know how to do within practice and, you know, whatever other tools you have to counter it, to kind of surround yourself with the compassion that will ultimately protect you from it.
Right. And those moments, you know, hopefully will expand.
Yeah, and call in more often.
Yeah.
You know, come to Sherry's retreats, events, whatever, all the things, as you already know, that are available, because it really is going to try to do 24/7, keep you in suffering, because that's what it's good at. And so for all of us, it's a 24/7 turn our attention to what we really want for ourselves.
And even when I get tired, maybe just going, oh, of course you're tired. Yeah, of course you're tired.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, of course this is hard. I know. And sometimes it feels like it's going to win and I'm not. I know. That's okay. I'm not going anywhere.
Right here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Deanna. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Deanna. You're listening to Open Air. Melinda, we are going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, one few swam in a river of joy.
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porch Dog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Melinda. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
Okay. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I'm moving.
You're moving, okay.
I'm moving. And I wanted to, first of all, say that thank you for doing this.
Oh, it's
quite an honor to be actually be able to speak on the radio.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's an honor from here, too. Thank you for calling in, Beth.
Yeah, it's kind of reaching through a lot of story.
Good.
The last time we spoke, you made a comment to me that has reverberated, and that I'm terrified of the range of human emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really, kind of, I'm really seeing that kind of in operation.
It seems like helped to describe your experience.
It seems like it's just like anytime an emotion comes up, it's labeled a problem.
Right.
And
yeah.
The positive emotions of falling in love, kittens and children and those kind of things, they're kind of allowed within certain parameters.
But not too much, huh?
But not too much. There's been the universe seems to want me groundless. And I kind of get it. The universe doesn't give me what I want. It gives me what I need.
Okay.
Because this isn't what I want.
So this being moving?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the story and the content, but it's like, this isn't safe. I'm not getting this. There's nothing that gives me the sense of safety.
Okay, and that's that feeling of groundlessness.
Yeah.
Yep. No place to hang on to. Okay. No place to...
no root. Well, it's kind of like the illusion that I know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Now there's no illusion.
You don't have a clue.
I don't have a clue.
Right.
I liked having a clue.
Yeah, some part of you liked having a clue. Did it help?
Well, the other thing that's become kind of clear in the last week is how much of my life is lived in my head.
Oh, yes.
It's,
yeah, it's
like,
falling, isn't it?
It's even right now in this conversation, I can feel myself, you know, sliding up and down.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and conversations with another, with an alleged external, being one of the really hard places to not go up into our heads for those of us who are so concerned.
Words, kind of our own automatic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, then it's like I can also feel that, you know, just these raw emotions that are being, that are kind of coming up, grief,
mm-hmm.
Tiredness, just running out of time, and kind of like there's like emotions that kind of just come up in response to that. And I can see that my resistance to the emotions kind of starts this whole different cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what is the different cycle? There you are, and there's grief, and there's not enough time, and then the emotions that come up in resistance to that?
The big one that I've been doing is isolation, and then kind of becoming lonely because I've been isolating myself.
Right, right. It's a, sort of a fairly standard duality, isn't it? I want to be alone. I really don't want to be alone. And we swing back and forth between those.
And, yeah, and it's kind of like I crave companionship, and then, oh, my God, these people are just way too close. I need to be alone.
Right. I've got way too many companions. Get them out of here.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so, like, feeling my way through this, kind of getting it that I'm causing my own suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And still doing it.
Yeah, which is one of those really hard places in practice, that we see what we're doing and we keep on doing it.
And I think I see the flowers,
that,
like dandelions. Like I pulled the dandelion out, but I'm not getting the root. Like I'm seeing the effects.
Uh-huh.
Did you lose me?
Not
exactly. I'm not seeing the cause.
You're not seeing the cause of the bouncing back and forth?
Like, I'm aware that I'm in my head, but I'm not really aware of what, you know, it's like I'm aware that I just was in my head. I'm not aware that I am in my head.
Right. And so what do you do then?
Yeah.
Because it may be that you go and try and figure something out.
Yeah.
Which is, as we know, a little bit like quicksand.
Yeah. And highly addictive and...
Well, very, very, very habitual.
Yeah.
But that place of coming into your body and locating the sensations in your body...
Yeah, it
seems
to be my throat and my upper chest.
Yeah. Yeah, so bringing your attention into your upper chest and letting some breath get in there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just kind of aware that I haven't been breathing in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's a great way for conditioning to keep emotions from our awareness. Just lock us down tight.
Yep. Yep. Because emotions are dangerous.
That's what conditioning would like to have you believe. And you know what
yep.
it is? It's dangerous to them. Because when you let them flow, you're free. You're free. But you
it seems like
down,
you know,
and conditioning's got you.
Oh, yeah. 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 That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what we all do. And that's one of those places of, you know, take a little risk. Take a little.
Not here, you know, to be safe.
Well, we try, but
well,
know,
and the thing is that it is safe. It's just, it doesn't feel safe.
Well, it's not alive.
It's not alive.
Right. If we're talking,
yeah,
that place
just,
of being locked down so I don't get to have my feelings is a place of not being fully alive.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's definitely true.
Mm-hmm. But when you can be with grief and just wail, or be with kittens and shriek, a good life.
Yeah.
That may not be your response to kittens. That's my response to kittens. But
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's actually my the emotions kind of it's like the way that they come through conditioning is squashed and
mm-hmm.
and then they stagnate and turn kind of huge, you know, and it's familiar.
Yeah, it's me.
It's not useful.
I am. I get to reinforce that I do have ground under me because I feel the same rotten way I've always felt. Who needs
yeah.
that kind of ground?
And then it's not true because, you know, it's like when I have experienced center, there's a full range of emotions that are okay.
Thank
a
you.
Lot of laughter, a lot of tears.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say when I have experienced it because, you know, it's sort of when I have seen through conditioning because center is where we are all the time.
Mm-hmm. The sun's always shining.
The sun's always shining. Conditioning brings in that illusion of a prison, tightens down everything in the chest, and we lose sight of being at center, being where we have the full range of human emotions.
Willingness is the key.
Yeah. And remembering that the people who, you know, all that training we got early on that taught us to keep our emotions locked down.
Yeah. Yeah,
all,
generation.
Those people aren't around anymore.
The world is changing. They're not around anymore.
Right. Only in our heads. With the voices of conditioning.
I'm the one that's afraid.
Your conditioning is afraid.
Yeah.
the conditioned parts, the parts of you who believed that they had to be less than human. They didn't think it that way, but that's what they believed.
So this is a lot to practice with.
And you know how. That's the neat part. You know what you're going for.
Yeah. Yeah, I have certain places in my life where practice is habitual also.
Mm-hmm.
It's like beyond the conversation, as you were describing earlier, it's just something that happens on a regular basis.
Yes. Yeah. It's a way of not abandoning yourself.
And that's really what is being let go of is my opportunity to abandon myself.
Isn't that something? So what being let go of is the opportunity to abandon yourself. Not a bad thing to let go of, huh?
Yeah, it's really not. It just kind of feels like through conditioning's filter that I'm being abandoned.
Yes.
But
yes. When the exact opposite is true.
Yes.
You got the best friend you could possibly have.
It's the life I've been given.
Yeah. Go ahead and accept it.
Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you, Beth. Call again, huh?
Yes, and thank you for having the show.
You are very welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You've been listening to Open Air. Tonight we've had the great privilege of being joined by Melinda, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a lovely evening.
Yes, it has indeed. And I'm going to invite our last caller to join us next week.
Yes, call in early.
Yes, and I want to give a big thanks to you, Melinda, for joining us tonight and for everyone who makes this show possible.
Yes, and you, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you. Not to mention all of our listeners and callers.
Yep, they make it possible.
They do. Thanks, Melinda.
Good night.
Good night.